use right now, but sometime, maybe soon, there's going to be a anniversary, the 50th anniversary of the Apollo 11 landing, where man first walked on the moon. So that was very exciting. And I would have hate to have been the person that stays up there, circles the moon on, I'm not sure what it's called, but not the command module. Maybe it is the command module or the LEM. I'm not sure what it is, but two people get to go to the moon and you stay behind. So that was sad, but maybe you have a very peaceful time. Maybe imagine being alone 250,000 miles away from Earth, and you are all alone in a little spacecraft. So I'm going to look at, I will try to get the exact date of the Apollo 11 landing, because it is, I believe, the 50th anniversary. Oh, here it is, Apollo 10, a great amount of teamwork. So now it's the 50th anniversary of Apollo 10. So April 26, 1969, Thomas B. Stafford, Eugene A. Cernan, and John W. Young went into space. They talked on April 26th. They talked to reporters about their upcoming flight, which essentially would be a dress rehearsal for the moon landing. Once in lunar orbit, Stafford and Cernan, aboard their lunar module, or M, called Snoopy, would descend to about 50,000 feet above the moon's surface and photograph the primary landing sites for Apollo 11 in the Sea of Tranquility. So that's what a lot of the spacecraft do now. They orbit first, and they get pictures of where the sites are going to be the best place to land. So what they did on Apollo 10, it's the 10th anniversary in April, 50th anniversary of Apollo 10, and very soon we will have the 50th anniversary of Apollo 11. So yesterday I was queuing up my podcasts. I'll have them on the air soon, because I've had a really bad thumb, needs an operation. I couldn't use the mouse, so I'm slowly getting those done, and those should be on shortly. So today what I'm going to talk about the giant galaxy around the giant black hole. Sounds like a fairy tale, a classic fairy tale. So this is on NASA.gov. It's a giant galaxy around the giant black hole, dated April 25th, 2019. And it shows a photo of the galaxy, which is M87. I always like to know, 55 million light years from Earth, and is imaged here by NASA's Spitzer Space Telescope, is home to a supermassive black hole that spews two jets of material out into space at nearly the speed of light. The inset shows a close-up view of the shock waves created by the two jets. So when it says it spews out material, I wonder what kind of material. Because do we call light material? Do we call X-rays or gamma rays material? I'll read on. I'll find out about that. So here's a nice picture. Galaxy M87, 55 million light years from Earth, and material is being spewed out from the galaxy, and NASA Space Spitzer Telescope is imaging this. I guess it would be an infrared. So let's read on. On April 10, 2019, the Event Horizon Telescope, or EHT, unveiled the first ever image of a black hole's event horizon. I wonder how it did that. The area beyond which light cannot escape the immense gravity of the black hole. So, yeah, the event horizon is where, that's the border. Once you cross the event horizon, there's no going back. So I would think that once the event horizon is reached, you can't see the matter anymore. So all of a sudden, it's visible, and then bang, it's invisible. So there's probably something that details that event horizon. Not the vent horizon itself, but the stuff before it goes in. So I believe at the vent horizon, would it be the Schwarzschild radius? And from some Schwarzschild equation, you can calculate the radius of the vent horizon of the black hole. So the giant black hole, which is M87, which is 55 million light years away, with a mass of 6.5 billion suns, is located in the elliptical galaxy Messier 87, M87, EHT, which is the Venn Horizon Telescope, is an international collaboration whose support in the U.S. includes the National Science Foundation. This image from NASA's Spitzer Space Telescope shows the entire M87 galaxy in infrared light. The EHT image, which is the Event Horizon Telescope image, by contrast, relied on light and radio waves and showed the black hole's shadow against the backdrop of high-energy material around it. Located about 55 million light-years from Earth, M87 has been a subject of astronomical study for more than 100 years and has been imaged by many NASA observatories, including the Hubble Space Telescope, the Chandra X-ray Observatory, and NuSTAR. So NuSTAR is some kind of nuclear telescope, I believe. In 1918, astronomer Heber Curtis first noticed a curious ray extending from the galaxy center. This bright jet of high energy material produced by a disk of material spinning rapidly around the black hole is visible in multiple wavelengths of light, from radio through X-rays. When the particles in the jet impact the interstellar medium, the sparse material filling the space between the stars and M87, they create a shock wave that radiates an infrared and radio wavelengths of light, but not visible light. I wonder why. Let's see. So when the particles impact the interstellar medium, they create a shock wave that radiates an infrared and radio wavelengths of light, but not visible light. So I'm wondering why that would be happening, why they don't radiate in invisible light. Maybe it'll tell us later. But sometimes they tell us these things and they maybe assume we should know, or we're not curious about it. I'm sure curious about it. In the Spitzer image, the shock wave is more prominent than the jet itself. Okay, so what happens is radiation is emitted and in a jet, and when the jets hit the interstellar medium, they create a shock wave. So you can see the shock wave and you can see the jets. So there's a beautiful photo here of the galaxy M87. Looks like a hazy blue space puff in this image from Spitzer. At the galaxy center is a supermassive black hole that spews two jets of material into space. So I'm calling Madeline. Hopefully she'll come and rescue me, because I'm not able to add things to my thing. So the brighter jet. Okay. Hi, Madeline. This doesn't add on. See that?
Okay. So do you want to come off mic and tell me about that?
Okay. Because I'm in the middle of my show, what should I do? So Madeline is going to try to help me out here. Thanks, Madeline. So I'm not sure what to do about it. Okay, so we have a jet here, and I'm going to look at another photo here. It says, this wide-angle image of the galaxy M87 was taken by NASA's Spitzer Space Telescope. The top shows a close-up of the two shock waves. So the shock waves themselves almost look like jets and created by a jet, but the shock wave looks like the jet. The Event Horizon Telescope recently took a closer-up image of the silhouette of that black hole shown in the second inset. So there's two insets, and the second inset looks like a donut almost, and I would say that's the shock wave, but that's the silhouette of the black hole. So actually, they are now able to image black holes in these photos, and this is the Spitzer Space Telescope. Thank you. Okay, thanks, Madeline. Madeline fixed it. She saved my life, and my show can... Okay. So there was something here. I wasn't able to add things, but now I can. So thank you very much. I apologize for that, but I am not an expert at these things. Okay, so getting back to the thing. By combining observations in the infrared, radio waves, visible light, X-rays, and extremely energetic gamma rays, scientists can study the physics of these powerful jets. So let me think what my understanding is. So when material is lining up to go in the black hole, so the black hole is devouring, it's gobbling up material, and there's a lot of it swirling closer and closer to the black hole. So almost like when you pull your plug in a sink full of water, all of a sudden you see this vortex going down. So I would imagine that's what the black hole is. The black hole is the vortex, and the material going around is the material lining up. It's like a traffic jam. So particles rub against each other. They're traveling very fast. So when they do that, they emit some kind of radiation. And I am not sure of the physics or the science of it, but for some reason, the stuff that is emitted sends out in powerful jets on the opposite sides of the black hole. And so that's what they're seeing here. But the jets don't look like big, long, linear jets. One of them is really kind of contorted and twisted, and the other one is bent a bit. So anyway, there's some images here of Spitzer. By combining the images in infrared, radio, visible X-ray, and extremely energetic gamma rays, scientists can study the physics of these two powerful jets. So again, what was told to me in physics class, and I guess, yeah, it makes sense. You don't think of it this way. You think about light. You say, okay, this is light. So we think of visible light as light, but it's just visible light. So X-ray is light, gamma rays is light, radio waves are light, infrared is light. All these things are light, so they're from the electromagnetic spectrum. They're light, but what we see is visible light. All the other ones are called light itself. Okay, scientists are still striving for a solid theoretical understanding of how gas being pulled into black holes creates outflowing jets. So of course, you have expert scientists here who are PhDs, whose brains are bigger than the CITR station, and they still don't know. They're striving for a more solid theoretical understanding. So what I gave to you is just a brief recap of what I've heard, because I'm not a specialist or a scientist. So we're looking at material falling into a jet. So you know what I'm going to do now? I'm going to finally cue up some music and go for a break. So when I come back, we're going to talk about more jets and more stuff going into black hole. Now, isn't that fun? Now, why is this stuff not doing? There we go. The stuff is the technical side of it today is getting the better of me, because for some reason, it's either not doing it or it's taking a long time to do it. So here we go. I do have some stuff queued up now. So this is Marco. You are listening to Astra Talk on CITR 101.9. Just wait, the machine. I spoke too quick. I thought I had a key to. Okay, so I'll go for a break. When I come back, we'll talk more astronomy. This is Marco on CITR 101.9.
When me touch down, bed I broke down. In a late night, me and a lockdown. She found chance to the side, rise a shotgun. In a my dark glass, cut off shots, clocks well clean. Touch you road with them blood clot team. See a girl up on a corner, cry and a scream. You know say the boss a fiend, a bean, she say. I'm a nah, give her the time, so of course I know say. Me go give her the wine. Now she say, oh me is a one of a kind. And that's how she became mine. And
see, you're listening to Astra Talk on CITR 101.9 with Marco.
I, take him girl away from me, Mokado. Can't believe I, him can't believe I, take him girl.
She a boss too, she get her own money. Slim thicky with a booty, yeah, she know a nigga love that shit. I love that shit. She got a man all well, I like so what? What that nigga got to do with us when we lost in the moment? And I'm deep in your ocean. I bet he can't believe that.
Can't believe I.
Oh yeah.
Can't believe I. Take him girl. From New York, that give her the spots. In my straight jeans, pants, I'm a wallaby clock. The boy say, oh, me not in a in class. Show him I give her all of the money in the world. Never know, say, him would I lose him to a regular youth. We give her the time and plus she say me.
A man of average height got out of a black sedan holding a baseball bat. He approached a dark-haired woman, hit her in the head, then hit her again as she fell to the ground. He continued to beat her ribs, chest, legs, and face until she lost consciousness. He then hit her again, got into his car, and drove away. This is a scene from a video game played by millions. If we want violence against women to stop, shouldn't we stop treating it like a game? Join the conversation at #NotOkay.
FM Vancouver Reloaded, playing your favorite tunes and mouth-humping your ear holes full of voice talk. Yeah, we do that.
That's right, when Super Giant Pizza.
It's been said that people disappoint, but pizza is eternal. That adage is being put to the test with Canadians weighing in on pizza, love, and slice etiquette. 6 in 10 Canadians have some type of relationship deal breaker when it comes to pizza, but 1 in 3 have no pizza love limits at all. The top deal breaker was eating pizza in bed at 18%, and closely behind was anchovies on pizza at 17%. Next up were picks the cheese off at 10%, eats pizza with a knife and fork at 8%, uses too much garlic dipping sauce at 7%, puts pineapple on pizza at 6%, doesn't eat the crust at 6%, and eats it cold at 4%. So cuddle up on the couch and share some za and some love.
Welcome back. This is Marco. You're listening to AstroTalk on CITR 101.9. When I was in Toronto, I was working there years ago. I would put pizza in the fridge and in the breakfast. I'd have pizza and pudding. It was a healthy boy's meal. So I remember my pizza. Is there any better food than pizza? You aliens that are listening in, you must try pizza. When you contact us, it's the first thing you got to do, okay? Take it from me. So we're back now, and thank you again, Madeline, for fixing it and for saving my life, because I couldn't take music on, I couldn't introduce the show, and something was wrong, but I didn't know how to fix it. So anyway, we're back. We're talking about WD-40, spray cleaner, no. It's M87, a galaxy way out there, 55 million light years from Earth. So this light we're seeing there from now is 55 million years old. Isn't that amazing? So we're watching a black hole. There's two jets, and two jets of material out into space at nearly the speed of light. So I wonder if that material is like actual atoms. I didn't even know atoms could travel near the speed of light, because when something has mass, it cannot travel at the speed of light. Only light with no mass can travel at the speed of light. So we're looking at two jets. We can see the event horizon from the event horizon telescope. So the images are combined. There's some nice images. Again, this article is on NASA.gov, dated April 25th. The giant galaxy around the giant black hole. So we have a black hole at the center of our galaxy, and it's a giant black hole. What do you call it? Supermassive black hole? Something like 4.3 million solar masses. So that's pretty big, isn't it? Okay. So the observations were combined in infrared, radio waves, visible light, X-rays, and extremely energetic gamma rays. So from this, scientists can study the physics of these powerful jets. So I wonder why these jets happen, you know. It's really interesting. You see two powerful jets coming out of nothing really, out of a black hole, and you wonder, how can that happen? So some of these jets go light years across into space. They're very big. Infrared light at wavelengths of 3.6 and 4.5 microns are rendered in blue and green and showing the distribution of stars, while dust features that glow brightly at 8 microns are shown in red. The image was taken during Spitzer's initial cold mission. Wonder what its cold mission. They've put a bracket around that. They've got my curiosity. Okay, I was just going to go into New Star And NewStar is a telescope. And let's see, images. It just says images. So I clicked on to open a page about NewStar because I wanted to find out more about NewStar, but it's not saying anything. It's just showing a bunch of pictures. Okay, so we just talked about the giant galaxy around the giant black hole, dated April 25th, 2019. So let's go to another story. We talked already about Apollo 10, so that was the Pathfinder mission. That's what I called it. I called it Pathfinder, where they went there, they circled around, and they looked for sites that they would land for Apollo 11. Oh, yeah, that's what it reminds me of. It reminds me of OSIRIS-REx. So now the spacecraft is circling asteroid Bennu, and what it's doing, it's going to be circling for not another year. In total, it's going to be about a year. It's been there quite a few months. So when it finally goes to the surface, it's going to go right close to the surface, extend an arm out, and the arm's going to touch the surface, and they're going to, I believe, blow some kind of nitrogen gas, and hopefully the regolith, they'll get enough of regolith to go inside their container. And that's what they're doing now. They're pre-scouting to see the best spot to go and collect material. So that's what it reminded me of. Okay, so now we're going to go to asteroid flyby. Well, what's an asteroid flyby? Well, just like an OSIRIS-REx, they are circling the asteroid. So it's not really just a flyby. So when, I believe, New Horizons went by Pluto, it flew by. It never really orbited, just flew by on the way there. On the way away, it took tons of photos, a lot of data. So this looks like it's going to be an asteroid flyby. Let's look. Let's read on. So it says, scientists now planning for an asteroid flyby a decade away. So there's called Apophis asteroid and Earth at closest approach. So there's something called an Apophis asteroid, and it's looking at the Earth's orbit. So this animation shows the distance between the Apophis asteroid and Earth at the time of the asteroid's closest approach. The blue dots are the many man-made satellites that orbit our planet, and the pink represents the International Space Station. So that's a beautiful photo. So again, this is on scientists planning now for asteroid flyby a decade away. It's on NASA.gov. It's dated April 29th. So it shows an animation of the Apophis asteroid. That's A-P-O-P-H-I-S. And Earth's orbit. And it shows all the beautiful man-made satellites that orbit our planet. And it says here, somewhere in there is the International Space Station in pink, but I am not able to make it out. So it shows Apophis comes quite close to the Earth, and we'll see. We'll read this and see what it says. So again, scientists planning now for asteroid flyby a decade away. That's April 29th, 2019. Here we go. On April 13th, 2029, a speck of light will streak across the sky, getting brighter and faster too. At one point, it will travel more than the width of the full moon within a minute, and it will get as bright as the stars in the Little Dipper. But it won't be a satellite or an airplane. It will be a 340-meter wide near-Earth asteroid called 99942 Apophis that will cruise harmlessly by Earth about 19,000 miles above the surface. That's within the distance that some of our spacecraft that orbit Earth. So this is quite amazing. I think it's astronomy is amazing. It is, there are predicting in a 10 years from now when we're going to look at this asteroid. And isn't it great? It's coming to us. So it's not like asteroid Bennu where NASA had to go to asteroid Bennu. This asteroid is quite well mannered. It's coming to us. So it's going to fly close enough astronauts can see it. And this week at the 2019 Planetary Defense Conference in College Park, Maryland, scientists are gathering to discuss observation plans and science opportunities for the celestial event still a decade away. During a session on April 30, scientists will discuss everything from how to observe the event, to hypothetical missions we could send out to the asteroid. Okay, so there's a hypothetical mission. Nothing's planned yet, but there's 10 years, so it's not that far away. It's not going to take a long time to fly there. So says Marina Brozovic, a radar scientist at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory, who works on radar observations of near-Earth objects, NEOs, and, quote, the Apophis close approach in 2029 will be an incredible opportunity for science. We'll observe the asteroid with both optical and radar telescopes. With radar observations, we might be able to see surface details that are only a few meters in size. End quote. So, of course, that makes sense. We don't even need to really make a mission because it goes so close. There's lots of telescopes. I'm sure Hubble and other telescopes will see it. And if the James Webb telescope is in space by then, it keeps getting delayed, it will see it too. It's rare for an asteroid of this size to pass by the Earth so close. Although scientists have spotted small asteroids on the order of 5 to 10 meters, flying by Earth at a similar distance, asteroids the size of Apophis are far fewer in number and so do not pass this close to Earth as often. So that's quite exciting. In 10 years from now, there's going to be an asteroid. I wonder if we can see it with our telescopes. The asteroid, looking like a moving star point of light, will first become visible to the naked eye, so we can see it to the naked eye, in the night sky over the southern hemisphere, flying above Earth from the east coast to the west coast of Australia. It will be mid-morning on the east coast of the United States when Apophis is above Australia. That's interesting. They know the time seems to the second of when it's going to be there. It will then cross the Indian Ocean, and by the afternoon in the eastern U.S., it will have crossed the equator, still moving west above Africa at closest approach, just before 6 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Apophis will be over the Atlantic Ocean, and it will move so fast that it will cross the Atlantic at just an hour. By 7 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, the asteroid will have crossed over the United States. Wow. And it shows, there's an animation here that shows the path along Earth where Apophis will be visible on April 13, 2029. If anybody wants to look at it, again, go to nasa.gov, look at the article, Scientists Planning Now for Asteroid Flyby a Decade Away. It is dated April 29. So there's a nice animation that's showing the path of the asteroid. As the asteroid passes over the Atlantic Ocean, its path briefly turns from red to gray. That is the moment of closest approach. After closest approach, the asteroid will move into the daytime sky and will no longer be visible. So I don't think we can see it here in Canada. So a team of astronomers at the Kitt Peak National Observatory discovered Apophis in June 2004. The astronomers were only able to detect the asteroid for 2 days before technical and weather issues prevented further observations. Luckily, another team rediscovered the asteroid at the Siding Spring Survey in Australia later that year. The observations caused quite a stir. Initial orbit calculations revealed that the asteroid had a 2.7% chance of impacting Earth in 2029. Fortunately, additional observations refined the orbit and completely ruled out that possibility. Since its discovery, optical and radar telescope have tracked Apophis as it continues on in its orbit around the Sun, so we know its further trajectory quite well. Current calculations show that Apophis still has a small chance of impacting Earth, less than 1 in 100,000, many decades from now, but future measurements of its position can be expected to rule out any possible impact. So it looks like it's going to cross paths with Earth again decades later. The most important observations of Apophis will occur in 2029, when asteroid scientists around the world will have an opportunity to conduct a close-up study of the Apophis's size, shape, composition, and possibly even its interior. At the conference, scientists will study questions like, how will Earth's gravity affect the asteroid as it passes by? Can we use Apophis's flyby to learn about an asteroid's interior? And should we send a spacecraft mission to Apophis? So says David Farnocchia, an astronomer at Jet Propulsion Laboratory Center for Near Earth Object Studies, CNEOS, who is co-chairing the April 30 session of Apophis with Brozovic. Quote, we already know that the close encounter with Earth will change Apophis' orbit, but our models also show that the close approach could change the way the asteroid spins. And it is possible that there will be some surface changes like small avalanches. End quote. And here's another quote from Paul Chodas, director of CNEOS. Apophis is a representative of Apophis is a representative of about 2,000 currently known potentially hazardous asteroids, or PHAs. By observing Apophis during its 2029 flyby, we will gain important scientific knowledge that could one day be used for planetary defense, end quote. So they are discovering these asteroids a long way out, and now they know that this one will come kind of close to Earth, close enough for me anyway. Any closer, I don't think I'd like that. Okay, so now that was an interesting article about an asteroid flyby. So now what I'm going to do, I'm going to go for a break, and when I come back, we are going to talk more astronomy. So thank you for listening. This is Marco. You are listening to AstroTalk on CITR 101.9.
UBC's Museum of Anthropology displays long-term and visiting exhibits of Indigenous art from around the world, and guided tours are free. Our permanent collection features one of the world's finest exhibits of Northwest Coast First Nations art. Our collection includes 36,000 ethnographic pieces, 535,000 archaeological pieces, and over 600 pieces in the Kroner Ceramics Gallery. There's a lot to take in. Luckily, at the Museum of Anthropology, final exams are always take-home. If you've never checked out this world-class facility, now's your chance. The Museum of Anthropology is located right on campus and free for all UBC students and faculty. Come enjoy our collection and resources.
When you join Balloon Club, we guarantee that you will be able to make a balloon poodle within the first day.
Here at the UBC Ant Club, we just like to talk about ants and compare ant farms. It's really cool.
Paperclip Club is all about, well, paperclips mostly.
At Blah Club, you can blah blah, blah 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 blah.
Explosion!
There's only one club worth joining at UBC, and that's CITR 101.9 FM. We got free tickets to shows, whirly pops, professional help in all types of audio engineering, passes to festivals, crazy parties, live band swag. All types of crazy people. Our programming manager rides a motorcycle. There's freestyle rapping, Nardwar the Human Serviette, the vinyl and record libraries, Discorder magazine, free studio recording, and it sure beats the hell out of Paperclip Club, which is a thing that I just made up because I work at
CITR.
So come check us out on the floor of the Student Union Building. We got all types of crazy shit for you to do. Or check us out online at www.citr.ca.
The one.
you feeling a bit crazy, or is your vision getting a little bit hazy? Or if you're feeling a bit funny, get your friends and listen to CITR 101.9 on AstroTalk with Marco at UBC. Depend on Marco for the latest in astronomy news at CITR's AstroTalk. Get a lot smarter now by listening to AstroTalk on CITR 101.9.
Hello, welcome back to TRC and TRC. Welcome
back. We have a little bit of time. We're 2/3 through our show. We're going to talk more astronomy now. And why not? I'm thinking about going to Mars. Let's go to Mars. Okay, so here we are. There's an article. It says, InSight captures sunrise and sunset on Mars. And it shows the little arm of the little rover that could. That's the InSight rover on the surface of Mars. There's a few rovers there now, and there's a few spacecraft orbiting Mars. So there's lots of stuff happening on Mars. So this is dated April 30, 2019. It says InSight captures sunrise and sunset on Mars, and it shows NASA's InSight lander captured a series of sunrise and sunset images. So the first one, it says, NASA's InSight lander used its instrument deploy camera, or IDC, on the spacecraft robotic arm to image the sunrise on Mars on April 24, 2019, the 145th Martian day, or soul of the mission. This was taken around 5:30 a.m. Mars local time. So it looks so cool. It's got the robotic arm. It looks like a space-age image. And you know what? It is a space-age image, something like you'd see on Star Wars. So there's a little robot there doing its thing. Now we're going, that was the sunrise, so it's capturing the sunrise. So the sun is coming up, and it's capturing it. And then it says NASA's InSight lander used the instrument deploy camera, IDC, on the end of his robotic arm to image this sunset on Mars. This color-corrected version more accurately shows the image as the human eye would see it. Now, wouldn't that be cool when humans finally go to Mars, and I think they will eventually, maybe, let's say, within a decade, they'll be on Mars, and I wonder, we're farther. Yeah, the sun looks smaller, so we're farther from the sun, and it does appear in this image that the sun is smaller. It wasn't a trick of my eye. It was the real thing, so the sun looks smaller. Pretty cool. Wonder what that would look like when we're so used to seeing a big-assed sun. We couldn't see our moon anymore. Okay. So a camera on the spacecraft's robotic arm snapped the photos on April 24th and 25th, the 145th Martian day, or sol of the mission. So I think a sol is about a few hours longer. So a Martian day is a few hours longer than an Earth day. In local Mars time, the shots were taken starting around 5:30 a.m. and then again starting at around 6:30 p.m. So that's our time. I wonder what they'd have to adjust the clock, because a Martian day lasts a different amount of time. And I read about a thought experiment where they had, okay, we're going to put somebody in a room, we're going to shut them off from the world, and this person is going to be subjected to a 48-hour day. Would they be able to adapt? Would they be able to adapt to 24 hours of sunlight and then 24 hours of darkness? So if we go to Mars, it's going to be a different day. It's going to be a longer day, maybe a longer night, and the sun is going to look very different. And I wonder what the two moons of Mars would look like. So these images are available both as raw and color-corrected versions. It's easier to see some details in the raw versions, but the latter more accurately show the image as the human eye would see them. Much farther from Mars than it is from Earth, the sun appears only about 2/3 the size it does when viewed from Earth. Yes, and it does look smaller. And here's another photo. Another image, NASA's InSight lander used the instrument deploy camera, IDC, on the end of its robotic arm to image the sunset on Mars on April 25th, 2019, the 145th Martian day, or SOL, of the mission. This was taken around 6:30 p.m. Mars local time. But again, since a SOL is longer, how can you say 6:30 p.m.? Because a Martian day would be longer. So how can you have a 24-hour clock? How can you have a 24-hour clock? So, oh, sorry. The average duration of the daytime-night cycle on Mars is, a Martian day is 24 hours, 39 minutes, and 35.244 seconds. So I was wrong. I thought it was about 26 hours, but actually it's 24 hours, 37 minutes. So, how long is a day on other planets? I'll look that up, and we'll talk about that later. Okay, so these are showing images of the Martian Sol. And it's so cool to see the sun a different size. So this is actually the second time InSight has captured these daily events. The camera took practice shots on Mars on March 2nd and 10th. So says Justin Mackey, an InSight Science team co-investigator and image lead at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory, and quote, "It's been a tradition for Mars missions to capture sunrises and sunsets. With many of our primary imaging tasks completed, we decided to capture the sunrise and sunset as seen from another world. The first mission to send back such images was the Viking 1 lander, which captured a sunset on August 21st, 1976. So 1976, that was like 43 years ago. So we've been on Mars a long time. Viking 2 captured a sunrise on June 14th, 1978. Since then, both sunrises and sunsets have been recorded by the Spirit, Opportunity, and Curiosity rovers, among other missions. And here it shows, wow, it looks like a space colony, like some kind of habitat on a space, on some kind of other planet. So it says, NASA's InSight use its instrument context camera, ICC, beneath the lander's deck to image these drifting clouds at sunset. So it shows the drifting clouds and says these series of images were taken April 25th, 2019, the 145th Martian day or SOL of the mission, starting around 6:30 p.m. Mars local time. So it shows some kind of dome there. It's really weird. What's that dome doing there? And then another photo, it says, NASA's InSight uses its instrument context camera. It's a much darker picture now. Beneath the lander's deck to image these drifting clouds at sunset. This color-corrected version more accurately shows the image as the human eye would see it. So drifting clouds. Interesting. About InSight, NASA manages InSight for NASA's Science Mission Directorate. InSight is part of NASA's Discovery Program managed by the agency's Marshall Space Flight Center in Huntsville, Alabama. Lockheed Martin Space in Denver built the InSight spacecraft, including its crew, stage, and lander, and supports spacecraft operations for the mission. Okay, so I'm going to go for another short break, and when we come back, we're going to talk more astronomy. Thank you for listening. This is Marco. You're listening to AstroTalk on CITR 101.9.
Are You Aware Radio, alternate Thursday 6 to 7 p.m. at CITR 101.9 FM. Profiling music and musicians take the route of positive action over apathy.
Old or New Testament?
I think the New Testament.
The question is, Pilate, remember Pilate from the New Testament?
What does Pilate? He fiddled while...
Just a minute. Let me ask the question, then you can give me the answer, okay? Did Pilate want Jesus to be crucified?
Pontius Pilate washed his hands of it.
So did he want him to be crucified?
Yeah.
No. No. No.
Well, tune in every Friday afternoon, 3:30 to the Night Watch Show on Virginia.
Well, find a good church. It'll help you.
Send me wine up the ting till it pile up. Big bumper gal, just a wine and a while up. They must spoil me a stop till it pile up. My money enough, so it my money
enough. Dance like you mean it. Dance like you on fire and you want me to know. You move like you mean it, shorty. See the look on your face. You either wanna fight or wanna make love, maybe both. They got me looking at you, watching the way you wind it and pop it. One more time, go wind and pop it, yeah, yeah. But that drink got me feeling alright. Pretty little thing, I could watch it all night. Feel up on that bumper, girl, I just might. Feel up on that bumper, girl, I just might. Baby, push back when I jump behind it. When I jump behind it. So when I jump behind it, push back on me. So baby, push back when I jump behind it. Baby, let me know you like it. Tonight, let's give them something to see. Everybody singing.
You're listening to Mayo on CITR 101.9 on Marco's Astrotalk. Push back.
The bar, couple shots, no chasing. My booty amazing. Come on, baby, chase it. Back to the floor, give us space. And
looking at me, watching the way I wanted him pop it. One more time,
hello,
I wanted
back.
Him pop it.
Push back. We're gonna push back. No, we're gonna push forward, cause we gotta finish this now. Okay, so we're going to the home stretch. So we're gonna talk more astronomy now, aren't we? Yes, we are. And there's something I open now. It says Forward to the Moon. It's a page on NASA, Explore Moon to Mars. If you want to look at it, it's called www.nasa.gov/specials/moon, then the letter 2, Mars. So again, www.nasa.gov/special/MOON, the letter 2, or number 2, MARS. So Moon to Mars. So again, www.nasa.gov/special/moon to Mars. And it says Explore the Moon. And here, I'm just going to read this quickly. It says from NASA's administrator, Jim Bridenstine, and quote, President Donald Trump has asked NASA to accelerate our plans to return to the moon and to land humans on the surface again by 2024. We will go with innovative new technologies and systems to explore more locations across the surface than was ever thought possible. This time, when we go to the moon, we will stay, and then we will use what we learn on the moon to take that next giant leap, sending astronauts to Mars. So that was NASA Administrator Jim Bridenstine, end quote. So again, it's www.nasa.gov/specials/MOON, the number 2, Mars. www.nasa.gov/specials/moon to Mars. So if you're interested in learning more about Moon to Mars, there's Inspiration Science, there's subtitles Inspiration, the Science, the Exploration, and the Economy. And we're going forward to the moon to stay. How are we getting there? With the Orion spacecraft. The Space Launch System is going to launch it, and there's going to be a lunar outpost. So remember, this is what I have accumulated some information. So if you have a launch, let's say, to the International Space Station, your rockets, I believe, don't have to be that big because you're just going to the International Space Station. But to escape Earth's gravity and to go really far away, you're going to have to big-ass rockets. So that's what the Space Launch System is. So it's going to take big rockets, a lot of fuel to get us out of Earth's orbit. So isn't that nice? We are going to the moon and then to Mars. Okay, so we were just talking about Mars, and I was incorrect. I thought a Martian day was 2 hours longer. So Martian day is called a sol, S-O-S, but it's actually like 37 minutes and 22 seconds or something longer than Earth day. And I thought it would be longer. But you know what? Why don't we look at other planets? How long is one day on other planet? When you think of a day, you normally think of one cycle of daytime to nighttime. This is called a solar day. So that's what we have on Earth. I didn't know it was called a solar day. On Earth, a solar day is around 24 hours. However, Earth's orbit is elliptical, meaning it is not a perfect circle. That means some solar days on Earth are a few minutes longer than 24 hours, and some are a few minutes shorter. Another way to measure a day is to count the amount of time it takes for a planet to completely spin around and make one full rotation. This is called a sidereal day. On Earth, a sidereal day is almost exactly 23 hours and 56 minutes. So let's read that again. Another way is to measure a day is to count the amount of time it takes for a planet to completely spin around and make one full rotation. So that's called a sidereal day, which is 23 hours and 56 minutes. And you think of a day as one cycle of daytime to nighttime. This is called a solar day. We know how long an Earth day is, but how about the other planets in our solar system? So that's what I was getting to. I Googled it. I was just curious to know, how long are these days on other planets in case we want to go live there? And I know you listeners, all two of you, will want to know how long is a day on other Earth. So quiz each other about this. How long is a day on other planets in the solar system? How long does it take for those planets to spin one full rotation? And what is the best way to show the answer to the question? Let's look at a few options. We can write a paragraph about how long days last on other planets. So here's a paragraph about Mercury. On Mercury, a day lasts 1,408 hours, and on Venus, it lasts 5,832 hours. Wow. Or on Earth and Mars, it's very similar. Earth takes 24 hours to complete one spin, and Mars takes 25 hours. So I had a misconception corrected here. I thought it would be how close you are to the sun. That's what determines the length of your day. But it's determined by how long it takes to spin once on its axis. So again, Mercury, one day is 1,408 hours. And on Venus, it takes 5,832 hours. So Mercury, 1,408 hours. I thought it would be very short. Okay, so the gas giants rotate really fast. Jupiter takes 10 hours to complete one rotation. Saturn, 11. Uranus, 17. And Neptune, 16. Now we have a table here. So this is on https://spaceplace.nasa.gov/days/en. So we're looking at how long are days on other bodies on the other planets in the solar system. So here's a table. Mercury, 1,408 hours. Venus, 5,832 hours. Earth, 24 hours. Mars, 25 hours. Jupiter, 10 hours. Saturn, 11 hours. Uranus, 17 hours. And Neptune, 16 hours. So this shows a nice little table. And it shows how long the days are on other planets, or other bodies on the solar system. So we are coming to a close now. Unfortunately, that's the bad thing about this is you got to pay your bills, so I got to go to work. So thank you for listening. I want to look more into spin-offs in space technology because that is a topic that's always interested me. So when you're watching TV, you see these fancy sunglasses or scopes. Those were spin-offs from NASA. And of course, my favorite, there's Teflon. So Teflon, I believe, the coatings of the space shuttle, like the tiles, that the heat shielding tiles, I believe they spun that and made Teflon cookware out of that. So there's lots of great spin-offs, and they are being used in a lot of medical techniques and medical research. So thank you for listening. You have been listening to Astro Talk with Marco. I'll talk to you next week. Bye.